peaceful moment.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's pretty common. Have you ever been in a group of people and someone says something that might happen that could be bad, and immediately everyone knocks on the table or looks for a piece of wood and, you know, knocks on wood? Or someone says, you know, I hope this happens for you, and you're like, me too, you know, and you cross your fingers. Like, we do some of those things. We, like, knock on the wood or cross our fingers as, like, little symbols of, like, hope, right? Or have you ever done this before you get on a plane? Some people will do a symbol, like, they'll cross themselves, or, like, I always kiss my hand and kiss the plane. Or have you ever done something where you feel like, you know, it may not be true, but you see a ladder and you're like, I'm not walking under that thing. That's bad luck. Or you see a black cat and you're like, I like your little cat, but don't cross my path. Like, we have these folk tales and things that we think about that are what I call magical thinking. And even for me, the reason I wanted to talk about this, because New Year's is always a magical thinking day for me. Like, you turn that page on your calendar, you see not only the first of the month, but the whole new year, and magically, it better all be better. Magically, yeah. Because we arrived. Some of us have this feeling like, why don't we just get a fresh start? We hit home base, we're safe, so to speak, right? We got to the new year. I don't know, have you ever felt that way when you feel like I'm getting to a new, physically to a new place or a new page on the calendar day in time and space, so it should just get better magically?
Yeah, and I love that we're talking about this because I come from a family that has so many cultural symbolisms around this. I mean, honestly, when Grandpa died, Grandma wore black for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's at least the way I viewed it. Now, clearly, I'm sure she didn't wear black for about a year. But, you know, there are those things. You don't step on a crack.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Great.
And, you know, the whole Matrix movies brought the whole cat thing back into perspective for people. And I'm not going to talk about the new Matrix movie. Everybody's going to have to go see that for themselves. But we bring these things forward that are so ancient and old in contemporary life. Is that because we want to feel the magic?
Yes, and I don't think magical thinking is necessarily bad. I think, like, for me, the idea of magical thinking is we want to feel good. We want to feel hope. We want, mainly, something deep inside us, I think, wants to have control of the uncontrollable. So we do these rituals, and we have these things that we go to that actually are very comforting to us. And I think as a society, we have different ways of practicing ritualized behavior. Like, most of us, when we celebrate our birthdays, we blow out the candle and someone says, make a wish, right? And so that's like, we know deep down that probably the blowing of the candle doesn't really influence the wish we have for ourselves. But we ritualize it because it's fun. It's a symbol. It gives us hope. It makes us feel comforted. Or like when I think about, for me, I have like my lucky bag that I take every time I go to a presentation. I fill my lucky bag with my things, and I like it. It's my lucky cow bag. It has a little cute cow on it. So I like it. That bag, I know, deep down, there's nothing about that bag that makes it special, but I have a sense of comfort that bag has come to every single gig I've ever done, right? So I don't think it's bad that we do those things for comfort, for consistency, for ritual, for hope. And I sometimes think about possibility. Like, I love a brand new notebook. Every time I'm ready for a new notebook, I'm like, oh, what will change? Because, you know, sometimes you have to have a very special notebook before you can start to write things down. Or a pen. I did my special pen, right? So I think the stopgap is, like, we do those things because it feels good, but if we just leave it there, like, I hope this new notebook makes all these things happen. I hope this lucky pen magically turns into opportunities for me. I hope my lucky bag gives me opportunities. That doesn't work. I have to take action on the things, right? So that's what I think we have to just acknowledge the magical thinking in our lives and what it gives us, but also think about how pragmatic thinking and taking action towards our goals also helps us too. So I'm not saying let's get rid of magical thinking. I use it all the time.
I love it. And because, you know, it's interesting, we're going to go ahead and skip this break, Kent, if we could. I want to go ahead and skip it because we're on a roll and really, I want to plant the seed about what this is. and talk about it more. You know, every year we come up with a slogan. I don't know, I've been doing it for 20 years, really. And some of the slogans, what have people said about these little slogans that I come up with? Cheesy, maybe, just like corny, right? Because for a while on the Dr. Pat Show, when I was doing Monday through Friday, I had Magical Monday, Terrific Tuesday, Wild Wednesday, mm-hmm. right? A Throwaway Thursday, Fantastic Friday. So this year, 2022, it's all about you, the new you, the renewed you. So the energy of that is new and renewed, right?
Yeah.
And you start to think about that, and that is transmutation magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think people, I would love for you to weigh in on this as you're sitting there in the snow, aren't you? Lucky you.
A lot of it in Colorado right now.
I know. I'm supposed to get a plane tomorrow, and like they got some storm coming in here. I don't even know its name. But let's just talk about this for a minute. Because when people have said about 2021, 2021, a son of a gun, or whatever you want to call it, I thought back about how creative and innovative people from all walks of life, from all countries have gotten.
Yeah.
And has it been a tough emotional year? Have people lost their lives? You bet. So we can't dismiss that. But I watched a spark of innovation. And then I watched other people never give up their message, never give up their walk. Greta Thunberg is like, I've been watching Greta since like when she could walk. But the point is this. Those two are magical moments in the most miserable of situations. So magic doesn't know the limitations that misery wants us to learn.
Oh, Dr. Pat, that's awesome. I love thinking about that.
You didn't say about that. That's like,
that's a,
I waited all day to say that to you.
Oh, I love it. I love it, but that's really...
Ked, you're going to have to type that up, put that on screen, right?
Time. Say that little statement one more time.
But what I'm trying to say is we want to talk about 2021, right? But magical and magical moments, they don't know the boundaries or restrictions that misery would love for us to embrace and incorporate. Magical and miserable, they can't live together.
I love that. This is your whole new thing. I can tell you're going to spin this off.
And I have to tell you, okay, can I confess? And then it's all you.
Oh, yes.
I have to confess. You all can email me later. I live 1 foot in our pop culture and 1 foot in some other planet. Brie Larson, I have been following Brie Larson throughout 2021. She has created these really cool posts. But then she went back to work on a Marvel movie. So today, she does a post. It's the cutest thing. These are moments that inspire magic to me. And they're the coolest thing because, of course, she's Brie Larson. Who cares? But there are moments where she's sitting in her little cool little slippers and she's on her little couch and you're watching her put one of these stretchable signs up, these really corny stretchable signs that you get at your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And you're watching her for 10 seconds and it says, "Welcome back, I'm back." And she chats a little bit and then she flips to an outdoor scene. See, these are magical moments that people that would not have done anything like this have done to inspire others. And you know how she ended the post?
How?
This is the way I love this. This is so like, I think she was listening to our message. Here's what she did. She said, you know, you've heard me talk about so many things, and there's so many things we could talk about. Blah, blah, blah. I want to put up my fitness video again. She inspired me. I'm just saying. But she said, but I don't want to do that. What do you want me to talk about? See, that's the energy that 2022 and this network's about. So you see how magic begets magic?
Mm-hmm.
And misery also begets misery. Take it away.
Well, I like when you're saying magic begets magic, because I think of that in the terms of possibility, right? And all of us want to cling to what's possible, what's hopeful, what gives us even a sense of control in an unpredictable world. And that's why I think magical thinking can actually be helpful when it's tempered with pragmatic action, right? And I do think this last year, the reason I started thinking about magical thinking is I remember 2021, I was like, why didn't it get better? And then 2022, I'm like, hey, let's be more realistic about a day changing versus your life changing, right? Like calendar moving versus you changing or you having different thoughts or actions. And I think that like this time of year makes all of us think about that. And the part of the magic is not losing hope. Because I feel like when we have hope, then we can take action, right? When we have hope or
hope
for what's possible, then that piece of misery gets a little, you know, lessened. And also I think we can manage things. I do also feel like by giving ourselves that hope, you open up the space, right? By giving yourself hope, and then there's a little bit of room for possibility, then there's a little bit of room to take a deep breath, and then there's a little bit of room for action. I think all those things can stem from that magical thought, but I do think that's where it lives, in possibility, in hope, in fun, and in wishes. Like, wishes, dreams, goals, hopes, all the things that we put out there, we need that to move forward in life. And I feel like that's a part of magical thinking that's helpful if it's attached as well to some intention to take action, right? And I think when we get so miserable that everything's out of my control, I can't change anything anyway, this year's been awful, look at all the things that have gone wrong, while that can be true, at the same time, like you just said, there are some things that people did that they never would have done otherwise. Yes. There are some things we've achieved that we've come through. There's some innovations that we've made. There's still hope for us. There's still possibility. And when you detach from that, I think that's what sends you deeper into despair, when you lose hope.
So let me just ask you this. So here's my next statement. I want to piggyback off what you said. Faith, hope, and charity have been a long-time phrase. And charity, it comes from, you know, it comes from the place. So some people changed it to faith, hope, and love. I'm not fussy about it. But that, faith, hope, and I don't mean faith religion. I mean the strength of your conviction that you believe that you're an amazing being, that you believe so strongly that doubt cannot seep in, not a single pore of your body or your essence, right? But faith, hope, and charity, or faith, hope, and love, whichever you choose, that those three things, that is the s'mores for 2022. You know what a s'more? You know what s'more is?
Yes.
It's the graham crust with the melted marshmallow and chocolate. So what you got is faith is the cracker. Hope is the marshmallow. And love is the chocolate. See, I think that if we can hold that image of giving ourselves some s'more, give me some s'more. Got that? Give me s'more.
I love it.
But we've got to have that. And you're so right. Tell us what happens from your perspective and what you've seen.
Well, I love that idea of putting it into the idea of faith, hope, and love, because I think we can recognize the whole reason to me that I'm thinking about, if I lost my lucky bag, I would still go to a presentation and know there's something that has to be within you that says, I'm the lucky thing. I'm the thing producing this. It's a nice feeling to have that, but I don't need it. And that unwavering belief in yourself that, too, like, do you need a new day on the calendar to make a new moment? Or could you decide right now at whatever time it is on a, you know, Monday afternoon that, like, okay, this is what I want. Like, you don't have to wait for a special time or a special occasion or a special symbol. Like, that faith in yourself and the hope that you have. Mm-hmm. Like, I hope for the future. I want to make something happen. Like, the things that are inside this is actually where I feel the magic is. And if we also, when we think about love and connecting with others and putting ourselves out there, a lot of times when we get scared or overwhelmed or feel out of control, we detach from others and actually get very insular. And I think that also limits our ability to grow, to learn, to share, and to connect. So the whole idea is like the magic really that we seek outside is really in us. And that idea of how the hope, faith, and love work together, I think that's a really beautiful way to think about the, that's my point today, is that the magic is in us. And if you lose the tangible things, really you can't lose yourself. So you never have to worry about misplacing your lucky keychain, right? Because it's nice to have as a symbol, but it's not necessary to have for your purpose and for your action and for your intention. Yeah. Those two things are separate.
It's so important to talk about that because there's a difference to, there's a difference between association and attachment. And so I'll give you an example. I have two bracelets that I never take off or rarely take off. And while here at Linda's, my green beaded bracelet broke. But I have three things that are symbolic to me. Why do I wear them? Somebody asked me about two of them the other day because I'm here in New Jersey. Yes, I brought some other jewelry, but for 4 weeks I've been wearing this, right? And for 4 weeks, I've been wearing this. And somebody caught it. I must have been moving my arms. And they must have caught it. And I guess in video, you can zoom in. The question was, that what's on this? And so I have to acknowledge this. This is this bracelet. I don't know how close I can get it. It's one of the bracelets that Sarah Maine had created. Sarah Maine Damayante is a Sanskrit expert. Now, it's just black, and it's got, like, stuff on it. It's like a metal. But the message is inspirational, it's hopeful, and it's a reminder to me. So in the morning, when I put it on, I'm putting on an energy. Does this make sense? I'm putting on an energy. Now, if I lose this, I will go get another, not because I think it's bad luck, but let me tell you what this is. This means the Sanskrit on here, the Sanskrit message, and I don't know if Kent can get that or not. I don't know how close I got to get to that for you to get it. But the message is, let pure universal love flow to all. Does that mean I'm going to be like a mean, you know what, biatch tomorrow? No. But isn't that what you're talking about, that sometimes we surround ourselves with symbols, like the beautiful picture on your wall? Right? Or maybe something you put on your desk at the office.
Things that remind us, things that inspire us. Every piece of art in my house has meaning and a story and something I love.
Yeah.
With certain jewelry that I put on when I want to remember a person.
Yep.
Or when you think about things on your desk, like that's exactly, I have like a little note that my husband wrote me one time, and I loved it so much. I have it in the little frame, and it just makes me feel good, right? And pictures of my kids or little symbols. Like I have, somebody sent me, my symbol for my business is a peacock, and sometimes people will send me peacocks and not
real. Wow.
I got stuffed peacocks. I got peacock pins. I got peacock ornaments. I got a peacock shirt. And sometimes when I speak, I'll tuck one of those in my bag as a reminder. Or even now virtually, I have my golden peacock hanging up to remind me that other people are on the end of this call. And the person who sent me the sparkly golden peacock that I'm hanging up is to me a symbol. Hey, there's people out there. And I always say peacocks like to get big, like getting big. And I always think about this show is called Get Big. Like I'm in my work, I'm trying to get big. And that peacock, it's a little reminder, hey, Karen, keep getting big because there's people out there that want this message. And it's a symbol, right? And it makes me feel good. It makes me thought about all those things are tangible. And I think if we look in our lives, if people listening even think about what in your life has meaning, what inanimate objects have you given certain attributes to, right, that make you feel a certain way? And what does space look like? You know, all of us can think about things like that.
Okay, so I don't know if you can you see behind me.
Yeah,
I'm at Linda's place. I'm in the room that I sit in when I come here, and I don't know if I'll be able to hook up my camera to show you more of it in a minute. But I sit in here for a reason. But this is Linda's home, So it says something about her. So behind me, I knew today I'd be doing a series of shows. So I moved one of the dragons that were over there to over here. I am literally sitting in a room with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Six dragon sculptures. It's not a giant room either.
Right.
But I'm sitting in this room. And the rest of the room is beautifully Asian. Almost everything in this room is Asian. Everything from the vase over there to the vase over there to this beautiful, turn the camera, make Kent a little bit crazy at the moment, to that, right? See, more. And yet now you're making me think, why today, out of all the days that I've been in this room, did I need a second dragon behind me? I didn't think about it as lucky. I think about it as magical. And I think that's what you're saying. We don't have to have these symbols as a way or a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
But we so relate to the meaning behind them or what they've meant to us to help lift us up sometimes.
Yeah, and sometimes we need inspiration and, again, and hope and a feeling of control, even though deep down we know these things aren't really changing it. That's why I think we have to, just the reality check of that. Our brain likes comfort. We crave hope. We want to feel like we have control in some ways. And so these things, again, I don't think magical thinking is bad. I think it can be helpful, especially if you start to notice the ways you use it. What, again, the stopgap is when you have something beautiful or inspiring or something you love or something that motivates you, that's one thing. But let's say you don't. You're in a bad place. You don't feel motivated. You're overwhelmed. And you're like, oh, if I only had my lucky blah, 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 then I could do something. That's not what we're waiting. Or if only this person would say this, then I could move on in my life. Or if only this would happen. Like, Those are the things I feel like that we have to talk about maybe after the break that stop us because we're waiting for my, why did my wish come true? Because I blew out a candle. And we have to work for it. But that's sometimes the stopgap that I think magical thinking provides a path. But sometimes we don't have the physical things there that we need. And that's why we have to look into the internal things that we have that can support us moving forward.
I love the idea of rituals, too, because we know that rituals, right, in themselves don't have to be associated with magical, but so many of them are.
Yeah.
I grew up in a very Catholic, as a young kid, very Catholic family. I went to Catholic boarding school at an age that no child should go to any boarding school, a very young age, 6 years old. But one of the things that I was immersed in, especially in that, were rituals. Now, at six, you're way too young to understand anything really about religion. But what you are is you're open. Your senses are open. And one of the things that I learned about and clearly made my own ritual about, which I loved, was lighting candles. Lighting candles. So much so, I think they thought I was a little pyro because, you know, I when you light a candle in a church, you're supposed to have money or something you do, and I would just go light all the candles, and it would be like a big sin or something, right? I would just go, I would take the thing, and I would just go, like, where there were no candles lit, and I would just go, like, light. I just loved it. Love candles to this day. Went to the cathedral, and I'm going to leave you with this before we go to break, and you can talk about it. Went to the big cathedral in New York. Wanted to light a candle. What do you think I found?
Do you want me to answer now?
Let's take a short break and talk about it.
Good cliffhanger.
Was I able to hold on to my magic mojo in that moment? We're going to take a short break. Terry, before we go to break again, tell people how they can find out more about you and work with you.
They can connect with me on social media at Knutson Speaks. That's K-N-U-T SON Speaks on Facebook, Instagram, and my website is knutsonspeaks.com. And I love chatting with people about customizing programs for their groups, doing consulting, doing coaching, or having presentations, keynotes, and breakouts. And a lot of things have gone virtual, so now I'm doing lots of virtual presentations, and I feel very skilled at that as well. So people can find out about me on my website and reach out with any questions that they have.
I love it. Let's take a short break. When we come back, here's where we are. Are you ready to embrace the possibility, the magic can tap into something so deeply inside of us that it can transform us, it can transmute us? How many people in a generation were forever transformed by Hogwarts? Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back. Get big out loud.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Carrie Knutson, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnutsonSpeaks.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is Get Big Out Loud with me, Dr. Pat, and I get to share the stage with the most amazing thing. I love that we're talking about, and this is a great theme to kick the year off, magical thinking. And just saying it, it creates an energy. It does. And I think for so often, and, you know, I've had one of my male friends say a couple things to me. He's like, it's a chick thing. The whole magical thing is Stevie Nicks. And yeah. And I said, I don't think that's true. And then we had a big conversation. So look, here's the thing. So much of the energy of what you're talking about, Carrie, at times is the thing that could help us dig out of a pothole. It helps move a heart from being cold and crusted over. The thing that allows us to help another person to cross the street. The thing that allows us to think about possibilities and not probabilities all the time. Mm-hmm. And yet, we have changed an entire generation from understanding elements of magic in some of the most curious ways. On the train to Hogwarts.
Speak to that. Now everyone has to know about Hogwarts, and I guess most people know about Harry Potter, hopefully.
Harry Potter, yeah. And why do I say that? Because we were never the same. And what do I mean by we were never the same? It allowed an entire generation at a really interesting time in our culture to believe in magic in a way we hadn't done in generations. Think about that. Think about it for a minute. You know, the last time a generation was gripped by something like that, right, goes way, way back to things like The Wizard of Oz.
And like Star Wars, maybe?
And Star Wars was another one. But you can see the notion of believing in those possibilities transcends people, transcends the idea of limitation into the realm of possibility.
Well, that's why we love those stories.
We love them.
Gravitate to stories. We love feeling inspired. We think movies, books, and things that take us on a journey and adventure. We love that because sometimes our own lives don't feel that way. We don't see what's possible, and sometimes we need that escapism or we enjoy that otherness that takes us. I even say Lord of the Rings fits that bill, too, that whole series.
It does. Lord of the Rings, another one.
Yeah, but that we gravitate towards story. We gravitate, and it's interesting that you brought up that, I think, because I was thinking about the stories we tell ourselves about the magical things or the objects. Like, we make up a story that has meaning. We're meaning-making machines, basically, as humans. And so, like, your
I move this from where it sat, probably for its entire life in this house. I moved it from that side of the room, and I put it behind me because there was a story I was making about it, but I didn't know it until you just said it.
What's the story?
Well, I think the story was that for me, I knew I was going to have an entire day here, right? And I knew I was going to be doing a lot of shows and a pre-record and talking with a lot of people. And it was interesting. I had looked at the one dragon behind me. Now, this is my story. And I had said, oh, my gosh, that dragon's been alone on behind me right here on that ledge, on that shelf. What, 30 years? And I thought, that dragon's got a bunch of other things over there. And I thought, I want this dragon to have some company with that dragon. Now, if that's not a psychological projection, but I also felt the magic of two. You know, there's something to be said about when two or more are gathered. And this has been a powerful image for me for the 4 weeks I've been here. But when I put this second one up, for some reason, maybe my belief moved me, the energy, that if I did that, my day would be easier and smoother, and it was. Now, what's the chicken and what's the egg?
Sure, and also, what's just made up? Like, the whole idea, like, we make up stories all the time. Some of them are actually helpful to us, and some are hurtful to us, right? And so the idea is, like, if you make that up, and to me, like, you want that dragon over there. You feel comforted by it. You want to shift some energy for yourself, right? Like, that story is actually a helpful story that then motivates you when you have a lot of calls today and you have to do all those things. There's something in you that's seeking the comfort, right? So you, inside, something in you says, do this and give yourself some comfort. Do this and give yourself some motivation or some hope or inspiration, right? And it's just an inanimate object at the end of the day. But your story is serving you, right? And other times we tell ourselves stories that don't serve us at all. Like when we think about, if I look at my bank account and say, okay, the number of dollars in there is equal to my worth as a person, and I make up a story about how that amount of money doesn't equal me being a success. Or I look at the number on a scale and I say that number, and I tell a story about that number and my worthiness, right? And we tend to do that a lot. Or if we don't live in the right house or have the right clothes, the right car, or whatever we think we need, a lot of that is storytelling that actually doesn't benefit us. And the objects we choose to give some special power to might be, like, some people love their cars, but some, and I think that's great, but some people have to have that certain car, the 2002 model, whatever, and that's somehow what... To me, the magic of a thing doesn't necessarily equate to your enjoyment of it or the actual or actually getting what you need from it, right? Like, so I feel like you got maybe a car that you paid for a big, huge price, and then you got that bill that you're going to pay. I'm like, how do you feel about that? Like, you know, have you overspent on that? Or did you try to buy a house in a certain neighborhood and now your house poor? Or if you're constantly having jobs to get you a certain amount of money, but you never feel gratified in the work you're doing, then what's the point? So I think that a lot of that plays into, we have to be careful about the stories we tell ourselves, because some of those stories are not helpful, not productive, and not in the realm of what's going to help us take action and move us forward, and not true. Like, why does the number on the scale equate to our worthiness? It has nothing. It's just a number. It's a number, right? So that, I think the stories are really important. And if you look in your own life, what stories are you telling yourself about the symbols that you have?
Yeah.
Right? And also, what could you do to bring some maybe ritual or some comfort or some possibility in your life? Like, what could you bring out that could steady you, give you confidence, have you feel hopeful? That ritual nature that centers you or it helps you feel positive. Like, I wanted to share, this is my sparkly peacock.
Yes, beautiful.
Isn't it so nice? And
yeah,
it hangs up right behind my computer. Whenever I do a talk, it's a reminder, right, of other people. And it just is a little story that I tell myself about this inanimate object. that moves me in a direction that I feel helps me, not hurts me. And I want to tell one other quick story about another topic. Like I had been dating someone for a while. This was a while back before my husband, and I'd been dating someone for 4 years, and he had given me a bracelet. And after we broke up, I didn't quite know when to take the bracelet off because I felt like it was a promise or a commitment or a thing that would admit that the relationship was over. And sometimes I think we do that. Like if people get divorced, they don't know when to take off their wedding ring. When's the moment to do it? Or like my father passed and left some things, and I felt like if I get rid of these things, I'm getting rid of my father. And all those things to me, like when to take the bracelet off, what to do with the ring, what to do with my dad's stuff, any of that stuff can really make you feel like you're trapped by the object. And that's another thing to think about with magical thinking. You've given that thing just as much power. And the funny thing is with the bracelet, I didn't know when to take it off. We had been broken up for a few weeks, but I had been wearing it almost 4 years. And I was in the airport going through security. And the guy, I beeped, and the guy said, you got to take your bracelet off. And I was like, this bracelet? But I've been wearing it for 4 years. And he's like, lady, your bracelet's causing the thing to go, take it off. And the craziest thing is when I took it off, the bracelet cracked. It was made out of copper. And I remember feeling that moment when I took it off, it cracked. And I was like, I cracked a little too with it because I'm like, oh, my God, this is really the end. This, I have to come to a realization that this is my truth in this moment. And this bracelet was a symbol for me at the ending, but it just, all that stuff was kind of circumstance. But see, the story I made out of it, it actually helped me to move on. And so I think those are things you can think about too. Sometimes we hold on to objects and things past their point of purpose, past their point of helpfulness or motivation or possibility. So that's another thing to put in your bag too and think about the objects you choose or your thoughts that you use for magical thinking. Sometimes you've outgrown them and sometimes it's time for some new things.
It's so funny you mentioned that because the minute that bracelet with all, they were prayer beads, fidget a lot. You know, I'm a tapper from a very young age. I'm a little fidgety. I have some quirky habits of things I do. Most of the time you can't see me because I'm under the camera, right, in what I do, whether I'm tapping or doing something annoying. And I'm not in my studio. And if you were in my studio, right, across the hall from Kent right now, you'd see all sorts of things. And Linda would ask me, why do you love this room so much? You could sit here. You could sit there. My left brain would want to give her a very logical Virgo answer, but I have no Virgo in my chart. Like, I don't think I have any. She's a triple Virgo. But even for Linda, when I give her the answer that this room feels right, that's enough. And there's something about it for me to be here after three flights have been canceled, to be surrounded in, maybe it's magical energy. Whatever that story is, I tell myself about dragon energy, about the energy in here, about the ornateness of precision of Chinese artwork. Whatever that story is, I'm going to get on a plane tomorrow, and it won't come with me, and I will still be the same. But I guarantee you, when I go home, I may try to look for dragons, or I may try to look for something else in my environment that gives me that feeling. Isn't that the element of humanity that's within all of us, part of our gift and part of our curse? Because that same thing I could do about that energy and talking about it, and I'd love for you to talk about this, is the same thing we could do if we carry around a lucky charm and lose it and cannot leave our home.
Well, that's the thing. If you put all your energy into the inanimate object or the thing and all the value, you say this particular thing has a value rather than the value I'm giving it. rather than the story that I'm giving it. That's the conscious moment where you say, I'm using my stories to help me. I'm using my magical thinking in a good way. And that's the line that we cross when we stop doing that, right? When our stories don't serve us, when our magical thinking isn't helpful, or when because of our magical thinking, we don't take tangible action. So there's a fine line of humanity, and that's what I call the messy middle that we're all in. And that we, but the thing that I think that changes that is thoughtfulness, intentionality, and a sense of knowing who you are, and that the magic that's in you is you, and that whatever you decide to put on objects that help you get through life, that make things easier, that make things beautiful or fun or have a great memory or something you cherish, gives you hope, makes you think about possibility. Like, I am never going to stop buying new notebooks. I love a new notebook and a nice pen, and I think that's okay, right? And I feel like I'll always feel a little bit, like every year I get a new paper calendar, and I love going to get the new calendar. I love thinking about what the year is going to bring. I love, you know, writing in it, and I need a paper calendar for that reason. I'm a very physical media kind of person. I need the physicalness of it. And I like the rituals of blowing out candles, and I like the my birthday, and I like the ritual, like even now when if I lose an eyelash, I always make a wish on it. I always say bless you if someone sneezes. I always knock on wood. I always kiss the plane. But it doesn't interfere with my regular life. Those things, like, help me feel hopeful. They give me what possibility is like. And I have to constantly examine the things that I keep, again, that may no longer be serving me. I have to keep thinking about the ideas that I may have outgrown. And maybe not my sense of safety, especially in these last 2 years, has really shifted in kind of the like, I don't, can you say that you're safe in the onslaught of news every day saying that you're not? And so part of it has to be like, I'm safe in this moment. I'm okay right now. What brings me comfort in this moment? And it's me talking to myself, not an external thing, which also goes in terms of like people seek out food, TV, gambling, the internet, whatever we seek outside ourselves sometimes for comfort, those things too are leading us in a different direction that's away from our inner knowledge and towards distraction. And that's another thing that I think is important to think about. All of this magic comes from someplace, and it's you, it's ourselves, and keeping tabs on that, being aware of it and being intentional about it is where our power is.
I want to take a really, really short break, Kent, like a 30-second break. And when we come back, I'd love for you to talk about how we create harmony between the magical and the practical. Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, welcome back. A lot to think about. Yep, that's because Carrie Knutson is in the house. And this is Get Big Out Loud. You know, I know that there is a message you're going to bring forth for us in 2022. You always have one. But before we do that, again, remind people how they can find out more about you.
Sure. They can go to KnutsonSpeaks.com or find me on any social media under KnutsonSpeaks and reach out for presentations or coaching. I also have a one-woman show that eventually will be back. Let's pretend we're back in public. But right now, the bulk of my work is virtual presenting and coaching and training. And you can reach out to me through KnutsonSpeaks.com or KnutsonSpeaks on any social media channel.
So help us understand now as we bring this forward, this really cool thing. As I sat very practically today, doing a lot of practical work, but with the spirit and the energy of what I created in the story of the magic of dragon energy that was sitting behind me. So this is a great time for people to do what you did. Yes, you have a calendar that you put your hand on. Linda has to get one every year, and it's got to be that calendar. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, we all use a digital calendar. Help us understand that harmony that we can bring forward between the magical and the practical thinking.
Yes. Well, I especially think as we start 2022, a lot of people are feeling that like overwhelm and dragging along the things like nothing magically changed, so we're sad about it. And those feelings, like acknowledging our feelings of overwhelm, sadness, this disconnect, I think those are so important to not deny it and be like, just fuck up. It's all going to be fine. What's the silver lining? So part of it is acknowledging where you are, because when you do that, you can figure out what you need. If I'm feeling disconnected, what will help me feel connected? If I'm losing hope, what will give me hope, right? If I need to recognize it just because the page turned on the calendar doesn't mean everything's new, what actions do I need to take in my own little circle of influence? What actions do I need to take that give me a sense of control? And there's an amazing quote by a psychiatrist named Viktor Frankl that I always think about. He survived the Nazi concentration camps and went on to write a book called Man's Search for Meaning, which is just a profound book. But one of his quotes is that decisions, not conditions, determine your path. And I always think about what decisions am I making, right, that will help me on my path regardless of my conditions. So that's why I think it's so important to ask ourselves, where am I at in this new year, right? And use the symbol of the new year and the representation to really say, where am I at right now? And then what do I need to move forward, right, to keep myself taking action? And will symbols of hope and possibility help me? Will some magical thinking around what I put in my space, right, how I think about what I need, right? And like the thing, you love to light a candle, right? I feel like I love to put on a nice pair of warm socks that are comforting when I get home, right? And I think about the little things like at work when we all like knock on wood, you know, like those rituals make me feel connected and close and comforted. So the thing between practical and magical really is what's inside of us, and feeling like, hey, I'm going to use my mind to help me be intentional what I think will bring me comfort, a sense of control, some hope, and remind me of what is possible. Something that can maybe live outside of my brain that's a symbol, but knowing all the time that everything I need is right inside me at any moment, right? And that's the power. That's the magic.
One of the things I wanted to say about that was, as you were speaking, I picked up a quirkiness in me, because I was thinking, maybe I'll let go of a lot of stuff, right, already. You know, but there are just some things I haven't. And I've noticed this about myself. I mean, we're walking the dog, the little dog. I'm back east because we've lost a family member. So we're making a lot of adjustments, a lot of support. And one of the things is we were dog sitting the little doggy Sadie. And I notice I'm walking, and there's a sidewalk here in New Jersey. And I noticed I wouldn't walk on the crack. I don't care, like, how far I had to step over it. I wouldn't walk on the crack. And I thought about that in preparation for today, and then I thought about something else. I don't care where I am. If I drop the salt shaker, put it over my shoulder. Now, how many decades of conditioning does it take for somebody like me, no matter where I am, I could be in the airport, I could be in a restaurant, and I will put the salt I don't even know what that means now, right? I don't even know what the salt thing means anymore. But that's what you're talking about, right?
Don't be so rigid. Like, you may need to go out and be like, I'm going to step on the crack and realize the world's not going to fall down. You are being so rigid, right? And if it doesn't serve you anymore, right? Or if the salt thing brings you comfort because you've always done it, but it has no meaning because you know what it means, you might be like, I need a new meaning for the salt. Because I like to do it. Or my grandmother.
I think it had to do it with my grandfather. I think it just had to do with watching somebody that was close to me pick up a habit and do it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I'm telling you, I don't even understand what the salt thing is about, but believe me, I will do it.
You have been listening to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will help you to know which thoughts are keeping you small in order for you to get big. Get big and live your life out loud. For more information, visit KnutsonSpeaks.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
Hey, good Monday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sound. Hope everyone is enjoying their Monday. 405 northbound out of those S-curves is still a little bit slow and moderate to slow going up through that Kennedale Hill. It will break through the top there around the VMAC and where the Seahawks actually finished their season. If you didn't watch yesterday's game, it was a great game. It finished out. I-90 westbound, it's just slow around the 405 interchange there, just around the Newcastle area, but everywhere else traffic's actually looking pretty good. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's careers. Are they the new normal? Well, what are they going to look like in 2022? With special guest, John Jordan.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The New York Firefighters Union says COVID-related illnesses hampered the FDNY's response to Sunday's deadly fire in the Bronx. However, the fire commissioner disputes that, saying staffing issues were not a factor. Officials now say 17 people were killed and dozens of others seriously hurt after flames swept through the 19-story apartment building. Wall Street is deep in the red to start the week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell over 500 points at times today as Treasury yields rose. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ were both sharply lower, with tech stocks getting hammered in a sell-off. The current Omicron COVID surge includes many breakthrough cases, which involve people who've been vaccinated testing positive. Dr. Brian Alsup with the University of Texas Health System says that does not mean the shots are ineffective.
The data still show that the current vaccines are protected against serious illness and hospitalization, which is probably the most important function of a vaccine.
All the studies are showing that breakthrough cases are more prevalent and are coming at a higher rate with this Omicron variant. But Dr. Alsup says the people who had breakthrough infections tended to have fewer symptoms and milder ones than those who were unvaccinated. Broadway is toughening its vaccine rule for children under the age of 12. Lisa G reports.
The new rule, which requires children between the ages of 5 and 11 to be vaccinated, will go into effect on January 29th. The owners and operators of 41 Broadway theaters are also extending the program, which allows for flexible exchanges and refunds.
Weather disasters cost the U.S. $145 billion in 2021. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says the country experienced 20 weather events that caused at least $1 billion of damage each. The year marked the second in a row with 20 or more billion-dollar climate disasters. It brings the five-year total to $750 billion. NOAA expects 2022 to be similar due to climate change and other factors, including population increases and more property in harm's way. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Hey, Mike, what's up? Hey, with 2022 coming along, guess what? We got some news to announce.
What are we going
to
announce?
Well, we are announcing that we are going to be continuing to broaden our show, and we're moving to KIXI 880.
880 AM KIXI.
Starting January 11th. We are going to be on Tuesdays from 3 to 4 p.m., but don't you fear, because everybody at KKNW will still continue to have our show broadcasting on Saturdays for the 2 hours, and of course, our replay options on Thursday morning.
Awesome.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at our Alternative Talk weather outlook for Monday. Well, we'll see a pretty much a soggy day today. High temperatures around 46, 47 degrees. Tonight, rain will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down to about 43. For Tuesday, running out the rest of the week, more rain expected. High temperatures on the rise from the upper 40s to the low 50s, with low temperatures in the mid-40s all week long. It's going to be a pretty wet week.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Sherry Clark, and welcome to Courage to be Seen. This show's for anyone who longs to take charge of their life, to create more success, accomplish their dreams, and to live in inspiring ways to be powerfully visible and visibly powerful. I'll be sharing stories with you from my own career and experiences, from leading engineering teams for the last 20 years, and also from interactions I have been blessed to have with people I've met from around the world. I want to give you the tools, techniques, strategies, and inspiration so you can be the best you. You can achieve the success you desire, personally and professionally. Being authentic, confident, and empowered are the keys to success and the life that you want. You can have the courage to be seen.
I'm Sherry Clark, and welcome to Courage to Seen, the show that focuses on helping you achieve the success that you desire. I will share with you tools and techniques, stories and strategies to be more authentic, more confident, more empowered. These are the keys to the success that you really want to have in your life. You know, and before we get started, I encourage you to subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. That way you get noticed whenever there's a new one out, and you won't miss any episodes. So you can just click right there, and you can subscribe, and you get all the latest episodes as soon as they come out. So choose joy. Have you ever seen these two words, maybe on like shirts or signs? Two simple words. Choose joy. Now maybe you're like, you've never seen them. You think, like, who would wear a shirt with choose joy? You know, the chances it's around you. Maybe you just don't take the time to notice. You're so busy with everything that you're doing that you haven't even noticed that someone might have a sign up. Choose joy. Now, if you think about it, or if you've seen choose joy, what's your reaction to it? Do you even have a reaction? Maybe you're wondering, why would even anyone want to wear a sign or a shirt that says, choose joy? Several years ago, I kind of had this opinion. I was at a conference, and I met someone, and they were all excited. They were going to write a book, and they were going to help people have more joy in their life. Now, I supported them, and I was encouraging them, but I was kind of like, of all the things you could write about, that's what you're going to do? Joy? So it's just a simple thing, right? Like, I didn't really think it was all that important. Like, to me, there was much more exciting things that I would rather someone help me with. I was about adventure and achievement, accomplishment. That's what I would want someone to help me. That's the kind of book I was going to reach for. Joy? Now, luckily, over the last dozen years or so, my mind has changed. Joy is one of the most amazing things. And that's what I want to talk about today, because you have to choose joy. I want to help you have more joy in your life. Now, you might be saying already, like, well, I'm not so sure about this. You could be like where I was a dozen years ago and just dismiss. Like, I'm not going to listen to this episode, Sherry, if you're talking about joy. But I encourage you, hang with me for a little bit. Find out why joy can be important in life. Find out maybe why, especially this time of year, you're not feeling joy. And is there anything that you can do about it? Because I think this time of year is holiday season. And I know some people say, like, well, happy holidays, as they're trying to be all-inclusive. And that's not what I'm talking about at all. I really kind of talk about when you start at the beginning of November and you go through the end of January, early February. It really is holiday season around the world. And I've led engineering teams, you know, in so many different countries. One of my hobbies is trying to learn about different cultures and the different ways people celebrate holidays. So early November, it started in India with Diwali. And then you have Thanksgiving and Hanukkah and Christmas and New Year's in, like, the U.S. and most of the world. And then you have New Year's in your Asian countries, China and Vietnam, et cetera. And this year, I think it's February 1st. It kind of changes a little bit. But so you can say, really, from late October, early November, all the way through early February, someplace around the world is celebrating a holiday. Not every day, but close. Because in addition to all these ones I named, there's a lot of these, like, religious holidays and, like, single kind of holidays, bank holidays in there. And when you think about holidays, it is really all around joy. And so you could say this is not just holiday season, it is joy season. It's celebration, it's music, it's lights, it's getting people together and laughter and having fun. And at the same time, most people are falling into one or two camps. Either they're on board and they just love the season, they love the joy, and they love all the celebration, or they say, this season is the worst time. It's anti-joy. It just stresses me out. I'm so burnt out. I'm tired. I have all this stuff to do at work. It's the end of the year. I'm overloaded. And then you put on top of it all the stress of presents and family gatherings and cooking and activities. And, whoa, if we could just stop, that would be more joyful. So that's not what we want to talk about either. So we're going to get to there because there's things you can do there. Because this is the time of year that you should be celebrating joy. So let's first talk about why is joy so important. I mean, joy, you know, it's a three-letter word. It's not just a shortened version of happiness. Because some people kind of interchange the two. Like, hey, I'm feeling joy today. I'm feeling happy today. And that's actually not it. They're two very different things. You could say, you know, happiness is kind of like just surface deep versus joy. It's like inside of your soul. It's part of who you are. That happiness is kind of how you react to the things that are going on around you. Versus, you could say joy is more like it transcends the moment. Now, I use these words intentionally. You know, if you think about your soul or transcends the moment, it definitely seems more significant. And that's what you want to think about when you think about joy. It's your inner feeling. It's not just how you react and your outward expression to what's going on around you, but it's really kind of that just heart and soul. It's how you behave. It's very intentional versus just kind of maybe what you're experienced in life. I like the kind of the statement of you can pursue happiness, but you choose joy. So that's the big difference. You have to choose joy. And so have you chosen joy in your life? I mean, think about it. You have to actually choose it. It doesn't happen. It's not something that you can just go and, hey, I'm going to listen to Christmas carols and now I can be joyful. But that's really not how it works. You have to choose. So if you haven't figured out now, it's much, much bigger than happiness. And that's probably the most important thing, if there's anything that I want you to think about, is it's bigger. And it's an important part of your life. So why do you care? Right? Why do I care? Why am I trying to change your mind on that joy is more than happiness? So let's kind of talk about some of the qualities of if you have joy in your life. The first one is joyful people are more resilient. And if there's anything we've learned in the last 2 years, is we need to be resilient, right? We need to be able to bounce back when things change around us, when we're going through tough times, that if you need to bounce back from sickness or issues with your job or maybe a death in your family, joy actually helps you get through this. When you have that joyfulness inside of you, yes, you still go through a lot of the bad things. And I have to admit, this year, I did this. My father passed away unexpectedly. And, wow, it was not a happy moment. It was horrible. That doesn't mean there weren't moments of joy as a family by getting together and talking about memories. And that's probably the biggest difference when you think of joy and happiness is you can't be happy and sad at the same time, but it still can be a joyful experience even when there's pain and suffering. So one, number one, joy is important because you can be resilient. The second thing is health. Joyful people are healthier, that emotionally and physically you have less stress, less heart issues. It can boost your immune system. How many times have you heard laughter is the best medicine? It's really true. Like, inside you, your body will heal itself. It has amazing powers, and that works better if you're joyful. Now, many people kind of like, Sherry, you know, I don't have time for this. I'm so busy with my career. You really want me just to focus on being joyful? Like, it seems like I should be working on getting stuff done, achieving my goals. So you'd probably be surprised that joyful people are more successful. In fact, You're 40% more likely to be promoted if you're joyful. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's what statistics show. 40% more likely to be promoted. So being too focused on your career and not prioritizing joy does not help you succeed. Yes, you need to work hard, but you need to prioritize joy also. It's kind of like your brain works better, I think, when it's in a state of joy. So don't dismiss it. So hopefully you're still listening and say, hey, give me a few more minutes, and we'll get to some ways that you can be joyful. And the last thing on why joy is so important is joy brings about more joy. So when people are joyful, they attract joy. If one person's joyful, another person, maybe they aren't, but then they start to feel joy. And so it's kind of like it snowballs. It's contagious. And so you will attract more joyful people to your life once you choose joy. So think of joy as savoring every moment. It's not this gigantic thing like your life is like instantly going to change. It's really a buildup of many small things. And that's why I'm saying you can be in a state of joy even when you're going through hard things. So I talked about, you know, like this time of year, many people say it's one of the most stressful times of year. So it's Christmas or whatever holiday you're celebrating, it's stressing you out. Before we get to things that you can do to help choose joy, I want to talk about specifically things that you can do to help you get through the stress right now, and then you could prioritize joy. So the first thing is, I give you permission right now, if you're stressed out and you can't find joy in your life, you have permission to step back. You don't have to meet all these society expectations of the holidays, and we have to do this and don't do that, and hit this gigantic list of people and get this gigantic list of people, presents and stuff. You know, like, all that really doesn't matter when it comes down to it in life. So just give yourself permission that, you know what, that's not the way you're going to live your life right now. If the stress that you're feeling is financial, set a budget. It's easier once you have a budget for the gifts. In fact, we set a budget just for that reason, to make it simpler. That way you kind of have an idea of, oh, I should try to find gifts around this range. And there's nothing wrong with that. Gifts actually aren't about money. It's about thinking about people. It's about spending time with people. Don't make it around money. So if it is a financial issue that's causing stress, though, feel free to, hey, here's the budget. Maybe you make homemade gifts. Maybe you do tasks for people. You spend time with people. There's a lot of things that you can do to show people you care about them other than to buy them gifts. You know, even sending cards, handwritten notes, thank yous are all very valuable. And many times, sometimes better than some of the gifts we give just to give gifts. I hate to give gifts just for the sake and then they get thrown away. You know, if you travel and that's what's stressing you out, reevaluate what you need to travel. Maybe there's a better time. This is a horrible time because so many people have issues with weather to actually travel. So keep that in mind. And maybe this year you try a new tradition and don't travel. If you're just getting jammed with everything here at the end, I recommend starting earlier. When my son was little and he was in the hospital all the time, and we spent a couple Christmases with my son in the hospital, you know, I get a lot of the shopping done before Halloween. And I do that intentionally because I couldn't trust that my son was going to stay healthy and I'd have time to do shopping later. And it really did help. I use Amazon and other online things a lot. I direct ship. I just save them into wrap gifts. It makes your life much, much simpler. The other thing is, you know, try to, like, wrap gifts along the way. I used to like to save everything to the end. I don't know if I like to look at the gifts or something. I'm not really sure, but my husband really drove. We're not wrapping gifts on Christmas Eve. And started to wrap gifts, like, all month long, just as you got them. Much, much easier. Spreads out the work and reduces a lot of the stress. The other thing is take advantage of the moment. So the last thing I'll leave you about Christmas is my family, we love to just drive around, listen to Christmas music, look at Christmas lights, spend time with the family. find the simple things like that that you can do to enjoy the moment rather than worry about all the things you have to do and all the expectations, because, like I said, I give you permission. You don't have to do any of it. Find out what works for you, and then all of a sudden that whole holiday season is better. So I want to take the rest of the time to talk about that joy is a choice. You actually have to choose it. And I want you to choose it. I want you to say, I choose joy for my life. Because if you're not finding joy, then you choose it. You have to intentionally do that. So what are some ways that you can choose joy? The first thing is I encourage you to start with yourself. Right? Start to think about what can you do? Now, I told you, it's kind of the small things, living in the moment. So what's something that you like to do, and how can you do it with more joy? So let's say you like to take a walk. When you take a walk, is it like you're going to walk a certain amount of steps? You're going to walk a certain pathway, a certain amount of time, and you're being this, okay, I'm going to just walk in, I'm going, I'm going to get it done, check mark, I got an upper list. Or could you really stay for that walk? Can you make sure that you look at your surroundings? Pay attention. Are there birds? Are there leaves? What are the colors? Make sure you experience joy while you're doing that walk. Let's say you like to cook. You know, many times, like in the evening after work, right, you're just like, okay, I need food on the table, got to feed the family. What do we have to do really quick? If you want to cook joyfully, you'll make sure to take the time, like, smell it while it's cooking. What are the sights, the sounds? You want to feel that food that you're cooking for others, especially full of love. And so what you want to do is, how do you find joy in the things that you enjoy already doing? Like, take a little bit more time to do them and really notice what's going on around you. Do you ever notice when kids play, how joyful they are? And then what happens as we age? We just, like, stop playing. I encourage you, find a way to add some play back in your life. And there's all kinds of ways you can do that. I can play ping pong with my son. Or the other day, it was a beautiful day out, so we were playing basketball, shooting baskets, and then we were doing some dribbling and some racing back and forth. Right? That's fun. It's joyful. Too often we don't do that kind of thing. Think about when you see, you know, families sitting around card tables and playing cards or Pictionary or various other games, right? Those are the things that that community and the laughing and all the joy. So find ways to incorporate that into your life, and you'll find it just grows. The second way you can choose joy is look for ways that you can help other people experience joy. You know, it can be as simple as smiling at somebody, greeting somebody, telling them good morning. Make sure you say thank you. Hold the door open for them. I like to tell people, have a great day. It's something I started many years ago. I'm not even sure when I started it. But you know what? To me, it's almost a habit. But I want people to have a great day, not a good day, but a great day. And it's interesting because initially people don't really notice when you say it, but it sounds different. And they're like, oh, okay, I'll have a great day. But that's what you want, right? You want to just have that little bit of extra joy that you can add into people's life. So another thing that you can do is start a gratitude practice. Start being more thankful for all the things that you have experienced in your life. And there's many ways that you can do this. Some people like to journal. And, you know, kind of like, I am thankful for kind of thing. And you can journal. Some people like to take a few moments at the beginning or the end of the day and reflect on what they're thankful for. Could be thankful for, like, the last day, that day, the next day, whatever way it is. They've taken that time to acknowledge we have so much to be thankful for. You can do it through meditation. You can do it through prayer. But you want to take that action and make sure you're acknowledging and being thankful. Another way that you can bring more joy to your life is to allow yourself to dream. You know, we don't do that. Sometimes you're so practical and like, this, I know I can accomplish this, so this is a reasonable thing to go after, and that's what I'm going to do. But you want to expand and really dream, and what can you bring into your life? I like to do the exercise of, you know, if I thought it was like a year from now, and I just had the best year of my life, what would have happened? I try to describe what the best year of your life would be. What are all the things that you would do? Where are the places you would go? Who are the people that you would meet? Let yourself fill up with that. Because if we're not thinking about all the great things that could happen, maybe none of them will. You have to dream and think bigger. When it comes to living joyful, we're not alone in this world. Community and connection are huge. And so we crave connection. And that's one of the things actually about COVID that's probably been the hardest thing, right? That we have limited our connection to other people. So I encourage you to find those connections. Choose, you know, how can we bring joy along with other people? I have an accountability partner. We have a call every other week. We share all kinds of things about work and about personal, and you have to have those people that you can reach out to share good things. It could be friends, it could be family, anyone that you need to talk to when needed. You need to develop those relationships in advance, and they can raise you up. Not people that are going to be negative and bring you down. You want to fill your life and have those connections with people that can raise you up. Another area to have more joy in your life is around self-care. Too often, we don't spend enough time thinking about what we really need, taking the time for ourselves, for our mind, for our mental health. It could be meditation. It could be yoga. It could be exercise. It could be as simple as owning a calendar and blocking out time for yourself. You know, practice saying no. I've talked about it before. Too often we just say yes and we get overstressed because we're overbooked and we don't have enough time for all the things. But stand up and say, no, I can't do that, right? It's an incredibly hard thing at times, but it will help you. In addition to self-care, think about your food choices. You know, what are you putting inside of you to? Are you eating the kind of thing that makes you feel good? Or are you stuffing your face and not feeling so good, right? Live in a joyful way. Also, make sure you get enough sleep. Too often we're just stressed out and burned out on caffeine, and that's not helping us. Now, when we do experience stress in our life, that I want you to know in advance, what are your go-tos to help you get through that, right? We want to say, okay, I experienced this stress, but I don't want to leave or go away from my joyful life. So what are your go-tos? It could be music. You could know, hey, when I listen to music, I'm going to feel better. It could be exercise. Like I go for a walk or a run or whatever, the gym, CrossFit, or whatever you like to do. Is the person that you need to call and talk to. Maybe you need some time yourself and you're going to go to the movie. I don't know, maybe it's a hobby. Things like knitting or woodworking. You can look at pictures of vacations that you went to or wherever it might be. But next, know in advance, what's that go-to when you have a tough time that's going to help you maintain that state of joy? Another thing that might surprise you that you can do to have more joy in your life is to set a goal and then work towards it. By accomplishing steps towards that goal, it makes you feel good, right? You can celebrate, hey, I accomplished this. So take that goal, break it down into steps, work towards them, celebrate as you go, right? Taking that action, and you know, I would tell you, start taking action tonight, whatever that might be, and you'll have more joy. And the last thing I want to tell you, if you want to have more joy in your life, schedule the joy into your life. Schedule it. Put it on your calendar. So think about the things that I talked about. It could be things that you need to stop doing or own around like Christmas so you can not feel all the stress, so you can have more joy. Or maybe you want to think about the second list of things that I talked about and focus on them. Like, what is the one thing that you can do? Maybe it's starting tonight or tomorrow. No later than tomorrow. But I want you to pick something. And what is that thing that you're going to do and take some action? Take that small bit of action. Maybe it's as simple as tomorrow morning when I wake up, before I get out of bed, I'm going to take 5 minutes and I'm going to think about what I'm thankful for. That everyone can fit that in. That's pretty small. If you say, well, I can't do that, then set your alarm 5 minutes early. Don't hit the snooze button and take 5 minutes to be thankful. And you'll find that you'll be more resilient, you'll be more successful, you'll be more happy. All of a sudden you'll go from joy not being a three-letter word with no importance, but being a core piece of your life. So I hope you enjoyed this. I want to remind you that it can only be yourself. And by embracing all myself, I have had such more success having the courage to be seen. I encourage you to check out my website, couragebeseen.com. You can find out more about me, my coaching program, my contact information. Let me know if there's anything that you would like to have me specifically talk about. If you have any questions from this episode, I'd love to hear from you. So until next time, I hope you have a great day, and I hope you hear from you too. Bye.
Thanks so much for joining me today. I hope you've been inspired to take action on at least one thing starting today. To learn more, check out couragetobeseen.com. There you'll find my blog and additional resources, including you can download a copy of 10 Ways to Live a More Courageous Life. Thanks again for listening, and make sure you tune in next time to learn additional ways to have the courage to be seen in your own life.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seat, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next to you.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, Fox Radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. I got to tell you, I am really thrilled about John Jordan joining us here today for a lot of reasons. You know, many of you heard me talk about my corporate career. You know, that career was the head of organizational development for a Fortune 50 company. But what does that even mean? And what were some of the most frustrating things that we saw as new talent arrived? Well, I got to tell you, John Jordan is the head of the Academy at Bank of America, the company's global learning and professional development organization, and I got to tell you, they're getting it right, because if we don't bring this learning, this development back, our future will be filled with people that don't have the skills they need to excel and to help the organization rise up. John, thanks for joining me here today. I love that we're talking about professional development in the new normal and that we're actually still talking about it. How about you?
I love it. It is a subject that's near and dear, obviously, to my heart, but to, I think, everyone's heart as they're considering their own development and how do they grow coming into 2022 and into the future.
I want to talk with you a minute about the Academy, but I also want to talk with you about what's underneath the inspiration and the passion to do this. Companies have been faced with enormous challenges, and if there's one thing I think that our company learned is that we have to help people continue to learn. What is it that you have seen in the past that has shaped the way you're going to address learning and development and in the future?
Well, I'll tell you just a personal side note. I mean, my career was largely in the field in our organization, meaning leading teammates in financial centers or in our wealth management business. I've also led analytics organizations and client experience. And the one thing that's common across all jobs and all types of roles is people want to be successful, and they want to be good at their job. They want to wake up in the morning and think that they're proud to work at the company that they're at and to make sure that they feel cared for at the company. So as that is a foundation, I've really been focusing on within the academy, and my team is fully focused on this, listening to employees and understanding what it is that they need, and then investing in ways to help them get there. And that has meant everything from a very hands-on approach to learning with coaching and mentorship, as well as a new focus on virtual capabilities. As you know, the world has changed, and it's gone very virtual. And so we've had to adapt the way that we help people learn by investing in technology and learning new ways to deliver it virtually.
You know, you're so right about that. I mean, there are things that have gone virtual and have gone digital in the past couple of years, where even in their declaration of guidelines, they swore they would never do that. But you're right. When an organization, and a very large organization, realizes that we have to do something different, boy, you have to adapt or you will not make it, right? Isn't that really what's on the line in so many ways for people?
Absolutely. I mean, being adaptable has been kind of the theme of the world these past few years because things change so rapidly, and that absolutely applies to our jobs. We've had to reskill tens of thousands of employees to do different functions during the pandemic, and it's actually opened our eyes to what's possible. And I think that some of these virtual tools that now me and almost everyone in the world are using around video conferences, things that I never used really before, have become commonplace, and people have become more comfortable with them. And there's new technologies coming online with virtual reality and simulators and artificial intelligence that are even enabling us to take training to the next level to help people really understand what it takes to be successful and to have a lot of practice reps before they take a job and actually have opportunities to work with clients.
So before we run out of time here, because I know these are really short good news segments, you know, you're coming to us here talking about, you know, some of the great things you've done at Bank of America. How do people find out more? How do they tap into what we're discussing here in a short period of time?
So bankofamerica.com has a great set of resources. You can learn about the academy. We've got a big social media presence on LinkedIn and Twitter where our employees are talking about some of the opportunities that they have. And then we've got Better Money Habits, which is a partnership we created with Khan Academy that helps people understand everything from how to balance their checkbook to how to better understand their credit score. So I'd encourage your listeners to check out those resources as well.
Let's hop over to leadership for a minute. Something that is near and dear to me, both from an academic and a research perspective, but also from a living perspective. The word leadership doesn't even come close to addressing what Peter Drucker addressed back then when he was the guru of that. We are now looking at a future and future leaders. What do you want to talk with us about in terms of leaders, leadership, development, and what is most important in this area to you all?
Oh, there's so much. We've invested quite a bit in an enterprise manager development series for the thousands of managers that we have here, because to your point, it is so important. That's really where the rubber meets the road. And I would say if your listeners could focus on just a couple of areas to get better in this coming year and in their futures, learning about people. I mean, empathy skills are going to be more important than ever before. We're leading in a very diverse world. People come from all different kinds of backgrounds. And so gaining empathy for all the different types of people that are going to be working on your team has never been more important. And there's a lot of resources out there around helping people understand other individuals. We've invested a large curriculum in empathy skills and understanding different life stages and different needs of our employees. That's a critical piece. And the second piece is adaptability and flexibility and just knowing that things are going to change quickly. So as a leader, you've got to be able to evolve and change quickly as well. You focus on your employees and invest in them in the ways that are going to help them be most successful every single day.
You know, a lot to talk about. I want to ask you this because I know we have a few minutes left. What are you most excited about when you think about this and you think about your position and the role you play and how you look ahead? You know, what are the trends you're most excited about? What are the areas that you're developing in the organization that you're most excited about for 2022?
There's a lot. I mean, I believe that with 200,000 employees at this company, we truly can change the world. And so the opportunity to equip that organization with skills that are going to help them better deliver for our clients, to grow their careers and provide for themselves and for their families, to be more fulfilled in the purposes that they have, that's really exciting to me. But I'm also really excited in this new technology that we're able to learn from. I mentioned virtual reality. To me, that's a large part of the future will play out in the virtual world. And so as we roll out virtual reality into all of our channels, I'm really excited to learn from that and to see where could it go next, because I think with any innovation, you don't necessarily even know exactly where it will go, but we have a big vision for it, and we know that it's going to help equip our employees to be successful.
So last question. I want to know your personal message, or I want to know what you'd like to leave us with, but, you know, for people listening to this, employees listening to this, they may not even know the right question to ask their employers about training. You know, what kind of advice can you leave us with today?
It's a great question. I think that, you know, one of the most important things for a potential employee is to figure out if it's a great – are you going to work for a great company? Is it a great place to work? Do they care about you? Are you going to be successful? Will you be proud to work there? I mean, those are foundational questions. And as it pertains to learning, you know, make sure that during the interview process you're researching the company and talking to employees and reading feedback to understand – are you getting mentored? Do you have access to learning? Are you given time to learn? Because those pieces are critical if you're going to have a culture of ongoing growth and career development. You can ask them how many positions are filled internally. For us, that has really shifted over these past several years as we've really focused on internal talent to fill our top roles. And I think that if you want to grow with a company, you need to know how much opportunity is there to gain responsibilities and new skills because of an internal focus.
Yeah, even in a volatile employment recruiting situation, I will tell you all of my research points to organizational commitment. And that comes from doing things for your people. John, thank you so much for today. Again, give out that website.
Bankofamerica.com, and thank you so much for the time today.
Everybody, look, if you don't know the questions to ask your boss, it doesn't matter. There are no right or wrong questions. You're asking for personal growth. You're asking to develop. And in turn, you're asking to contribute to your organizational health and well-being and your career. Thank you, everybody. Let's take a short break. We'll see you next time. Everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you join us for a good news segment. You know, over time, we have talked about the many, many shades of breast cancer. We've done it early on, 18 years ago, and today we're talking about innovation. We're talking about technology. We're talking about importance. And we're also celebrating, if we can celebrate, October as Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And why would we celebrate this? We would celebrate it because today we're talking about the progress we are making. Solomon Moscovich is joining me here today, MBA, GM of Oncology at Natera. And the reason that Solomon is joining us here today is because the journey that Solomon is taking is one of high responsibility. And responsibility for looking at oncology, for looking at what is going on in oncology, for looking at how we can move forward with technology that enables us to take a snapshot of who we are, what we're capable of and what we're at risk for. And that's the basis for a great conversation with Solomon today. Solomon, it's great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I remember the first show I did on this was so many years ago, talking about breast cancer. And of course, it is a conversation that happens because usually somebody close to oneself has been affected by it. But I fast forward to where we are today, and I would like for you to give people that have not been on the pulse of this an update. Where are we? Where are we statistically with breast cancer? And then we'll talk about what you're most excited about. Where are we? What's the state of the union here about breast cancer?
Wonderful. So about 280,000 women will be diagnosed this year with breast cancer. And statistics suggest that one out of every eight women are like be diagnosed at some point in their lifetime. That's about 13%. There are some people who are at increased risk for getting breast cancer, and that may be because of a family history or because they inherited a DNA mutation in one of their genes, in a breast cancer gene, that can increase that risk up to as high as 87% for being diagnosed with breast cancer or ovarian cancer and other cancers. Over the past couple of decades, the screening methods have improved significantly, so people are recommended to get an annual mammogram starting at the age of 45 in order to detect the cancer as early as possible if it's going to happen. And for people who are at increased risk, who are a carrier of the gene that I mentioned, those women are recommended to get an annual MRI as well as an annual mammogram starting at a much earlier age. Mm. And I think the key to all of this is early detection. And that's what I'm here to talk about, because early detection, you know, makes a difference. We have proven now that people who are diagnosed with stage one or two disease can frequently overcome that disease and survive for many years. And it's really about early detection.
And, you know, that leads me to what we're talking about today in Natera, of course. And I want to make sure people know how they can find out more. I want to make sure everybody goes to the website. You know, Solomon, what I have is Natera.com, N-A-T-E-R-A.com. Is that still correct?
That's absolutely right, Natera.com.
Okay. And the reason I want to send everybody there is because I love research. I love when people do research, and I love when then they share the research. And, you know, here's what I love about this. When you go there, you're going to find enough information so that you can be on the pulse of what Solomon lives and breathes every day. Why? Because, Solomon, you nailed it. Early detection. That is what gives women a peace of mind. Do you know what I'm saying? That idea that we are now in a position to have early detection. Isn't that what you're finding as you do these interviews and you speak to people and you speak to women, right?
Totally agree. Natera is an innovator in medical diagnostics and genetic testing, and our mission is to enable earlier detection to inform difficult medical decisions for people with cancer or for people who are wondering about their risk. So one of the things that I'm very excited to talk about today is that there's a new technology to help detect breast cancer recurrence for somebody who's already been diagnosed with the cancer. And this is new technology that was introduced by Natera about 2 years ago and is really changing how cancer is managed, not only in breast cancer, but across all solid tumor types, including colorectal cancer, lung cancer, bladder, and more. And we've proven that Natera's test can detect recurrence up to 2 years earlier than standard diagnostics with very high accuracy.
You know, the next question that people ask is, and this is really an important question, and probably not for this particular interview, but there is a reason to be interested in early detection. Can we talk about that for a minute, other than my comment on sort of the freedom, right, that you get from that? You know, give us the, how should I call it? Give us the upswing on what early detection does for women.
Yes, I'm happy to. I think it comes down to knowledge is power. So if you have a chance to detect something and be aware of a problem earlier, you know, before, in the case of cancer, before it has spread to other parts of the body, you have a significantly higher chance of intervening and curing that disease. And that's true if you've never had a breast cancer diagnosis, but it's also true for somebody who has had a diagnosis and is worried about recurrence. Because even though October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, you know, for those who have been diagnosed or who have a loved one who have been diagnosed with cancer, it's not about awareness. It's about living under a cloud of anxiety for a long time to know about whether the cancer is coming back. And you have to know about what tools and technologies are available to help improve your chances.
As you do these interviews and as you step out in the world, Curly, this is something you're passionate about. What touched your heart to point you in this direction, Solomon? And there's always a story behind a story. I know I call this a good news segment, and it really is. But, you know, people want to know, when you're out talking about something that is so important and innovative, we also want to know what's going on in your heart. Tell us about that.
I would be happy to. I'm into the field of medical diagnostics just over 10 years ago, working on a project with a brilliant physician scientist at Stanford University. And about 5 years later, when I was at Natera, my father was diagnosed with a cancer of the esophagus. It was stage 3. And he was treated with everything available, chemotherapy, radiation therapy, and surgery. And we were always very worried about his cancer coming back. And, in fact, it did come back. We started tracking my dad's blood with Natera's new test called Signatera. We realized that very quickly that the test could pick up recurrence in his case a year earlier than scans. He had multiple negative CT scans where the Natera's blood test was picking up the cancer. And I really believe it made a difference for him. And so that's had a big impact on my life. And I want to share that story with everybody. And everybody should know about this new technology that can help get ahead of a recurrence.
Let's talk technology, but first let me thank you for sharing that, because, you know, behind coming out here, and people may not know this, they hear these short segments, but they don't know, Solomon, that, you know, you commit to days of doing these interviews to bring the message out. Let's talk for a minute about Natera. Let's talk for a minute about what this testing is about, because usually when you say testing to people, every fear about this shows up. But let's talk about what these tests are, how they're available for folks, because women need to know what to ask for. You know what I'm saying? So give us,
right,
what is the technology? Tell us about this, and let's give women language so they know what to ask for.
Great. So I'm going to tell you about two different tests. They're both blood tests, which is great because they're non-invasive. The first test that's offered by Natera is the Empower test, and that's the one that looks for an inherited gene mutation. Now, this is a change in the DNA that one would have inherited from one's parents, which confers increased risk of cancer. So we talked about that. And that's a mutation that will be present in every cell in the body. It doesn't mean you necessarily will get cancer, but it does increase the risk, as I mentioned. Now, there's a second test, and that's the newer one, and that's called Signatera. And the way that works is it looks for a signature of mutations that were only present in the tumor. And it looks for that signature and traces of the tumor DNA in the blood. And that's really brand new. It's remarkable the way that test works because every patient gets a personalized test, custom built just for them based on the mutations that Natera saw in the tumor. And then Natera looks for those traces in a blood sample. And Natera can detect even a single molecule, tumor DNA, in a tube of blood. And that's what enables that detection, you know, up to 2 years earlier.
And part of this, too, is, you know, bringing this message. And one of the reasons, Solomon, you're doing these interviews is to, one, demystify this, right? And what I mean by demystify it, because one of the hardest things to do, especially for women, and even to have a conversation around breast cancer, right, it is the two words that no woman really wants to hear. But what you're doing is helping us understand what the technology is so we can really take back the power of our health, right, and know the right questions and know the latest innovations. I mean, isn't this part of why you're doing these interviews beyond breast cancer awareness? This is breast cancer, you know, in advance awareness so that people can really feel empowered about knowing this, right?
I totally agree. And people should know also this is, even though this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, these tests that I described, in particular the Signatera Cancer Recurrence Test, it's not only for breast cancer. We've proven that that the Signatera test works in colorectal cancer, in lung cancer, in bladder cancer, and really across solid tumor types to detect recurrence much, much earlier than it becomes visible on a scan. And it's really about getting a jump on the cancer coming back, if it is going to come back, and having a chance at a curative intervention. But for most people, the cancer really is gone. And this test, if it's negative, can bring enormous peace of mind.
You know, I know you're getting off to go do other interviews, and we've talked about a lot. I want to ask you this in closing. One, please let folks know about how they can find out more, and then also what they'll find when they get there, if you could do that. And then I'd love to know your personal message, what you'd like to leave us with today, Solomon.
I'd be happy to. So, first of all, talk to your loved ones, talk to your doctor about the Natera tests, and educate yourself. Visit our website. That's natera.com, N-A-T-E-R-A.com. There's lots of information there, including peer-reviewed published studies showing how the tests are working across different cancer types. And finally, in terms of my own message, I think that there's an opportunity to protect yourself, take charge, and know about the tools that are available to you and to your loved ones to protect yourself.
Solomon, thank you so much for everything you're doing. Thank you for bringing this out there for people. And thank you all for tuning us in. We're going to take a short break. Please get educated, get informed. It will open up the pathway for the action that you personally can see to take. We'll be right back.
Views.